welcome in, everybody. It's Michael St. John and Adam Ward. We're back with you. Fun and Then Some podcast series number one, volume three. Actually, one never hit the face of the earth.
We ended up having a bit of a trial run.
Is that what that was? That
ultimately never saw the light of day because you and I got so antsy, we kind of jumped the gun on the technical side of things there before we got the go-ahead green light from the producer. So
we had a great show, but we didn't have it all where we could actually, where people could hear it. First of all, I want to say thank you to everybody that tuned in. Last week, we had quite a few listens to the podcast, and it is available, of course, at fun927.com, which is the Fun website, the Fun Facebook page, the Fun Twitter page. It's on YouTube. We have our YouTube page, which is Fun927. You go to youtube.com/Fun927. So we got it in a bunch of places. We are also going to be posting them in Tennessee at our sister station, WTNK, the all-new Fun 93.5 FM and 1090 AM very shortly. And I don't know if this one will hit it or not, but anyway, thank you for listening and thank you for joining. And I know a lot of people, I had one person that listened, let me know that they listened while they were in the bathroom. I'll just leave it at that. What is the Charmin?
Does that make us the equivalent of a magazine or Twitter?
Or Twitter. It just reminds me that Charmin's theme is enjoy the go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So listen to the Fun House, the Fun Radio, Fun and Then Some podcast and enjoy the go.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And of course, last week we were sort of, we were very sports themed, very heavy in that. Of course, I was thinking about that as the week has gone on and preparing for this edition. And I really thought about it and we made light mention of it there, at that time when we sat down to record that. Other than the political news going on in the world, the second biggest batch of news was coming all out of the sports world for many various reasons.
And by the way, we don't talk political.
That's right. And so we weren't going to go down that road. So the big news topics were what's happening with the Super Bowl and the Senior Bowl and recruiting, which was, you know, last week, National Signing Day. We'll talk about that here in a little bit and hit some clips on that. But since that time, there's been a few other big things that have happened. In particular, I know, Michael, one that's sort of right up your alley, and it's not mine. I say that because it's really not mine, but the Oscars, and you and I have sort of talked about this on and off throughout the week. You were sort of one of these that was, I hate to use this word, but sort of enamored with the way the things went down with the Oscars.
I thought it was a well-produced program. Nobody watched it. Well, I won't say that. It was down 10 million people from last year, and then the Oscar ratings have been down for many years now, for about 5 or 6 years in a row. They do it hostless, although mm-hmm. they had what I call a faux host. They had different celebrities come on. And
right.
Of course, they opened with Steve Martin and Chris Rock, which was hilarious. And I thought the production of the show was very good. People ask me all the time, why are you a big... Well, first of all, living in Los Angeles for 4.5 years and being in media, you sort of get... whether you want to be or not, you sort of get enamored and involved in.
That'll get it to you.
And you meet people that, believe it or not, and I watch, this is the one thing, somebody was watching a movie with us the other day at home and said, you watched the whole thing, you watched it till the credits were over. I went, yeah. And then we're like, why do you watch it till the credits were over? And I said, because I may know somebody on the credits. And really, that's why I watch it to the credits, because with my kids graduating from high school out there and from being in the media business out there and being in broadcasting, being a radio talent or a personality or a radio programmer in this part of the country, it's sort of special. You don't run into a lot of people in the media business, and so radio is sort of held in a high standard, high abeyance. In California, being a radio DJ or a radio program director is sort of like being a cab driver. It's about the same level because you're so far down the line because you've got movie stars, movie moguls, movie stars, movie studios. Then you got the television world, and it's all culminating out there.
Yeah.
So by the time you get down to radio, you're sort of the low ring on the ladder.
Right.
But that's how. And in I had kidney surgery in 1981. On February 16th of 1981, I had a kidney stone that was 9 centimeters removed from my left kidney, and I was operated on, meaning I was cut open. I had a 7-week recovery period from major surgery. And the last week of recovery, I spent in Los Angeles, and a good friend of mine who has since passed, Don Andy, got me tickets, my ex-wife and I, to the 55th Annual Academy Awards. So we had to get a limo, and we dressed up, went shopping, went to Neiman's, and got shopping. You know, we dressed the part. And I'll never forget, we arrived, the show was back then at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, which is right in downtown Los Angeles. And if you ever watch Dragnet and you see the City Hall building, it's the city building, what they have on their police badges.
Right.
Just to the right, the lower building that's four stories tall to the right is the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and that's where the Oscars were that year. So we get there, we get out of our limo, and we got there about 2.5 hours before the show began because they told us to, because the A-listers, they sort of block off everything in the last 45 minutes for all the big names to get there. So about an hour, about 2 hours, 2 hours, 15 minutes, our limo picks up, drives up to the red carpet, just like you see. Guy comes up, opens the door. I go to step out, and the first words I hear is, "It's nobody." So that was my experience in the Oscars. We rode up the elevator with the guy that was the concierge, was the lawyer for the first Godfather movie. And I can't think of his name, but he was a very nice guy. But being at the Oscars and going through that and seeing it, and it's a once in a lifetime bucket list kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was sort of like being it's sort of like being at a fraternity party and you weren't part of the fraternity.
Right.
That's exactly what it felt like. And having been in a fraternity at Vanderbilt for 5 minutes and then leaving the fraternity because I didn't like I just didn't like it. I was there for one semester. It was very much like that. Yeah. You were at the fraternity party and you weren't a member. So,
well, like I said, none of this is really something that is, I guess, to say up my alley. But I do know, I do keep up with it a little bit because I partake in seeing these movies and these TV shows, these actors, actresses, in keeping up with them a little bit based off of what they do. If they make a movie I like, you know, for instance, Joaquin Phoenix and Joker. First of all, for those listening, I do not recommend that as a family sit-down movie. You better have...
Then you ought to see Parasite.
you better have yourself a very strong internal constitution about yourself in order to see a movie like Joker. But the performance that Joaquin Phoenix put on, I know he won an award for it. The performance he put on, it made, I think, everybody in the theater that night that I went and watched it with my dad, and even me and my dad, we left with our jaws dropped. From the overall epic side of it to the story was really, really well done. But Joaquin Phoenix, very, very well done as an actor. I walked out and said that guy ought to win every award that he's nominated for. And if he's not nominated for it, shame on them because it was that good. But then you turn around and you look at the award that Brad Pitt won for Best Supporting Actor. Brad Pitt, Best Supporting Actor. And by the way, all the nominees in that were not just A-list actors, but A-plus list actors, Tom Hanks and the likes. What is Hollywood that changing that much?
Have you seen that movie?
No, I haven't seen Parasite. No.
I will. I'll give you my video card, my digital copy. You not there? No, he wasn't in Parasite. He was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm-hmm.
Right.
First of all, being in the radio business, being a radio guy, and having grown up in the '60s and being, you know, going to college in 1969 and during the Vietnam War era and everything. That and Tarantino, Quentin Tarantino directed that movie.
One of the best.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a terribly good period piece
mm-hmm.
in this day and time. I mean, it's like, you know, World War II. They look at the movie 1971 or 1917 and say, okay, that's a World War I period piece. Well, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a 1969 period piece. And it opens up with Robert W. Morgan going, dun, 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 93 KHJ. And you hear Robert W. Morgan come on the air. Welcome back to Los Angeles. And it's an air check. Mm-hmm. And they're driving down Sunset Boulevard, and it just goes on from there. And he did a great job. And the movie is lightly tied into the story of the Manson murders and how they cross paths. I don't want to give away the whole premise of the movie, but I thought when I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
yeah,
I said, that will be Best Picture. Okay, mm-hmm. And Melanie, that's the Miss Melanie, Blondie in the Dark, Melanie has a hard time following that movie because it jumps around because it's got two or three things going on at one time and they're trying to show you all three things. So she wasn't as enamored with it. But of course, living in LA and the radio and KHJ plays through the movie all the time, you're hearing it. And I said, Best Picture, without a doubt. Then I saw The Irishman. Uh-huh. And you talk about a movie that got screwed The Irishman is a great movie and got no awards.
Really?
Zero awards. It was a great, you're looking at Joe Pesci, you're looking at Robert De Niro, you're looking at Al Pacino.
Some of the same names that were on that supporting actors list.
A fabulous movie. Long. I think the thing that, that cost The Irishman, it's a three-hour movie. But
A three-hour movie that doesn't fly under the flag of Marvel or Disney.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I can buy that.
That's fair.
But Marvel or Disney movies aren't going to get Best Picture nominee.
No.
But anyway, I saw The Irishman, and then Melanie understood it and watched it, and it was sort of Godfather-ish, and she's not a real Godfather-ish type movie, but Nanny and I both said Best Picture.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen it, and I only had heard about it when the list came out. I hadn't even heard of it.
Then, a week ago Saturday night, I was in the studio at the house, and Cinemax had a pay-per-view for $3.99 of Parasite. And I had had two people tell me, you need to watch this movie. You need to see Parasite. You need to see this movie. You will be blown away. So I'm like, okay, $3.99. Melanie's asleep upstairs. I'm working down here. Me and the cat. I'm going to watch this movie.
You and the cat.
So Jazz and I, we watched. And you've got, and when I bought the movie, I didn't realize, I knew it was in a foreign language. I knew it was in Korean, but I didn't realize you had to read the credits or the subtitles all the way through.
Really?
Totally through.
Yeah, you mentioned that the other day.
So I'm trying to do something else in the studio, and then I'm rented this movie that I have to read the subtitles. So I put aside what I was doing, and Jazz and I sat on the TV in the studio and watched Parasite. At the end of the movie, I went, Ryan lives with us, Melanie's oldest son, who manages Cricket Wireless, and they have some great deals right now. But
Shameless plug.
I went in, I knocked on his door, I said, you got to watch this, man. I said, this thing is incredible. It reminded me, I came out of watching that movie, I can remember coming out of watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and feeling the same feeling.
Really?
Same exact feeling. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was one of those movies that changed movies forever.
Yeah.
And I think, despite the fact that this is a movie in Korean with subtitles, if you buy the movie or rent the movie and watch the movie, it is incredible.
Hmm.
And I'm not one to, especially, you know how I am about foreigners.
We won't go there.
At least right now, not right now. But if there's a bad thing to say about this movie, I would be saying it. I was absolutely blown away. And I've talked to several people since that has watched the same movie and got that same feeling. That it's a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest kind of revelation.
Hmm.
I can't tell you how it ends. I'll tell you the plot of the movie. The plot of the movie, rich people in the richest part of Seoul, Korea.
Yeah.
Poor people living in the sewers, the sewer people. Family of sewer people, family of very wealthy people. Sewer person's oldest son is a sophomore in high school, and his buddy that he's planning to go to college with is going to the University of Illinois State University to study in America. And he's a tutor for this young girl that's a freshman in high school's English classes. He's teaching her English, Korean boy teaching her English. He gets his buddy, when he goes off to this job, to tutor her, but he wants his buddy to tutor her so she won't get involved with any other guys because he's secretly got a crush on her.
Yeah.
It starts with that. He has a sister that is a year younger than he is. He has a daddy that at one time won an Olympic gold medal, and his mother, who's a domestic.
Hmm.
And they end up infiltrating and becoming part of the rich people's servant family. And I'll leave it at that. The twists and turns and the quirks. And then the last 5 minutes, you will sit there with your mouth open.
You think so?
It's incredible.
Wow.
Parasite. And they deserve to win Best Picture.
My wife and I, we have a very big tendency to see a trailer for something or a poster for a movie coming out or something. And, I want to see that. We need to see that when it comes out. we don't ever end up doing it. Even when it hits DVD or something, we'll see it on the shelf at Walmart or at Target or Best Buy or whatever. And, oh, yeah, I really wanted to see that, and continue to walk on. I don't know why that is. We just, I don't know. I haven't even seen, what was that war movie with Andrew Garfield right after he did the Spider-Man movies, Hacksaw Ridge.
Right.
And I really wanted to see that, and I haven't even seen that one.
Two for one at Walmart in the bargain bin right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll bet you, well, the Academy Awards, as we're taping this, was last Sunday. And this is, we're taping it on a Tuesday. And the new movie releases get released on DVD at Target and Walmart and all those places today. I'll bet you they had Parasite Sunday night. I was in Walmart. They had Parasite for $19.95 on the Blu-ray. I'll bet you they've pulled it. And when they'll re-release it as best movie, it'll cost more. That's normally what
happens. Probably. What is the, and this will sort of be the last question I have for it, but, and you sort of alluded to it, but what is the appeal for you mainly for the Oscars or the Academy Awards or anything like that? What is the appeal for you? Because a lot of people from around here, the only kind of excitement that they get out of anything movie-wise or TV-wise is when they say that they're going to be just across the line in Georgia filming, or they're going to film something here in Alabama down in Birmingham or something. What is the appeal for somebody like you to something like that?
First of all, being in the broadcast, being on the radio for as long as I have, doing morning shows, keeping up with that so you could talk about it on the air.
Yeah, well,
and be
course.
Relatable. Number two, living out there, being out there, before I lived out there, having gone to Los Angeles 2-3 times a year for 20 years. Living out there for 5, and now coming back and, you know, realizing, you know, you see something on television, you see a award show of something like that on TV. And I've been to the Grammys, and I've been to the MTV Awards, and I've been to the Academy Awards. And you think, oh, it's show is just like what you see on TV. It's sort of like going to the Senate or the House of Representatives chamber in Washington, D.C., and thinking that you're going to see all these people that you've elected sitting behind their desk, listening to every word of every speech and going over every bill and every word. And it's the biggest bunch of malarkey you've ever seen. It's people running in. I have witnessed the floor on Wall Street of the New York Stock Exchange. I've stood in the gallery and watched what goes on. And the Senate and the House of Representatives chambers in Washington is a step down version of that chaos. It's people walking in and out. They come in, they make a vote, they walk in, they go out. There may be four out of the House of Representatives, there may be four people out of 300 that are listening to somebody's speech when they're speaking. It's the biggest bunch of bull.
Yeah.
You know what? And Hollywood, or when in TV production and these award shows, are the same thing. Because when they go to break, everybody leaves the room. They go to pee, they go to smoke a cigarette or do something else.
Yeah.
They go to toot a little cocaine, whatever they're doing. They go talk to each other across the aisle. It's like, you know, and then they'd start dimming the lights out in the hallway a minute before. They dim the lights, bring them back on. That means it's a minute. Then all of a sudden, 30 seconds later, they dim the lights twice, which means it's 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And at 15 seconds, they flash. The lights start flashing, so it means get your butt back in your seat.
Yeah.
And that's what the MTV Awards are and the Oscars and the Grammys are when you're there. So
right.
You're not really watching a show. You're watching individual segments of performances.
Right.
So what you see on TV, watching it, is actually more enjoyable than being there. Because you're getting the whole show.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're there, yeah, it's cool to be there and everything, but it's not, it doesn't have that jazzmatazz that you get from watching it on the television
right.
or watching a movie.
Yeah, I could understand that. A lot of people say the same thing about some sports, you know.
I had a movie shot in my house back in 1994. I lived on Tierra Street in North Hollywood, and right across from LA Valley College at Coldwater Canyon. I was 3 blocks off of it. Went through the 94 earthquake. And in fact, the movie got shot right after the earthquake in my house. And we were locked out of our house for 5 days because actually we were back here in Birmingham and in Nashville for the 5 days while the movie got shot. But it's a B-grade movie. It's a B-rated movie. I'm trying to think. There was one person in there that you would know. But you can probably find it on, you know, one of the $1.50 bin somewhere, yeah, or on Netflix or whatever.
Right.
But it's a whole different world. If you've never been been there or done that, it's a unique experience. People around here, they see the finished product and don't understand the backstory or the backside of, yeah, the product. But when you see it up close, you get enamored with it. It's a long answer to a short question.
Yeah, well, that's all right. And in other words, or in other newsworthy moments coming up for the world in particular, Valentine's Day is coming up here this week at the end of the perfect timing for it to fall on the weekend, because it always just feels like it doesn't feel right when it's falling on a Tuesday night and you got to get up and go to work the next day or something like that. So for it to be a set in stone date on the 14th of February, for it to fall on a weekend day, whether it's Friday, Saturday, even Sunday, feels much better. But I know a lot of people are always looking forward to Valentine's Day. First of all, while we've got a second, let's thank all our fun people that got in on our, probably, I know it's the biggest contest thus far of 2020. We're just getting started, but it's probably had the biggest response since our 50 Shades promotions. We did two of them for the movies that came out. Jonathan Holcomb from Asbury was the winner there, the Valentine for a Lifetime winner. Big congratulations to him. Jonathan and his lovely wife, who I also saw had replied to the Facebook post on that. Give you a quick rundown of what they got. They are enjoying a stay and some bubbly at the Wyndham Garden Inn on Lake Guntersville. And if you've never stayed at the Wyndham Garden Inn, folks, you are missing a treat. And I'm sure they probably still have some rooms available for Valentine's weekend if you want to get in on it.
I think they're down to just a couple, but I can assure you, and they're having a huge Valentine's party, or Valentine's night party with the Brad Cornelius Band and Buffalo Eddie's. If you haven't been to Buffalo Eddie's lately, you know, it used to be sort of a dark, sort of enclosed sort of a bar area where they had entertainment. Now it's wide open. You've got a 160-degree view of the lake. It's beautiful. But those people that run that hotel, Chris and that crew, are fabulous.
Yeah.
And you're right. I can't agree with you more. If you haven't, that's one of those, if you want a daycation or a staycation, as they call it, that's the place to call.
It's peaceful. It's quiet time on the lake. I can't tell you enough about how wonderful a time you would have that you might not realize you would have until you do it. I think that's just one of the things, you have to do it in order to get it. Jonathan and his wife, by the way, we're taking care of Valentine's for Jonathan. We're pulling him out of the fire on this one this year. He'll have dinner at Connor's Steakhouse at Bridge Street in Huntsville. He also will have 2 dozen red roses from Simply Made in Morgan City for his lovely bride, a box of chocolate-covered strawberries from Chocolate Indulgence on Brindley Mountain Parkway. And, of course, we're going to take care, speaking of movies, we're going to take care of their movie time needs with a $50 Redbox movie card courtesy of Eva Bank and our friends over there. Wonderful package again. Jonathan Holcomb from Asbury, the winner there. He and his lovely wife will have a wonderful Valentine's Day. And that leads me, I've known you guys for quite some time now. You guys have been a part of my life for over 7 years, or coming up on 7 years now. I've got to know you pretty well outside of the business side of things here. I've stayed at your house, for goodness sake, on numerous occasions. Is Blondie in the Dark, Miss Melanie, is she one of these that just absolutely loves Valentine's?
And if it's so,
Well, that's true. It is her birthday.
It's her birthday.
So what are you going to do?
If this year it is a very special birthday.
Why is that?
It's 50 years.
No.
Okay. I'm not giving away your age, by the way. It's just a celebration of 50 years of
something.
Melanie. But she looks forward to her birthday, and tying in Valentine's Day makes it very sweet, needless to say.
Yeah.
And you have to do something special when your wife's birthday's on Valentine's Day.
I was going to say, is that something like when people are born on Christmas?
Yeah, it kind of is, except you don't have some guy in a red suit with a beard. At least I don't think she does.
No.
But it's very special. Valentine's is very special. Yeah, well, you mentioned something when we were running down those list of prizes. Have you ever eaten at Connor's Steakhouse? Speaking of Valentine's, and a great meal.
I have not. I've heard a lot about it. I know some people who have.
They were voted number one steakhouse in Huntsville again this year.
Really?
And you got to realize now, granted, Huntsville doesn't have a Palm or doesn't have a Morton's or doesn't have a Manny's or doesn't have a, but there are some good steakhouses. Fleming's is a good steakhouse or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Connor's Steaks are fabulous. And he also has a location in Nashville.
Yes, he does.
Cool Springs Galleria,
yeah,
in that Cool Springs area. And reciprocating, coming to Mid-City, which is that area that used to be the mall in Huntsville, the Madison Square Mall, that's now called Mid-City, we're getting a Jay Alexander's restaurant.
Really?
And Jay Alexander's a a good friend of mine I used to work with Sun Group Broadcasting, Frank Woods, the president of Sun Group, who has since passed. He backed the gentleman that started Jay Alexander's, and it's a great place to eat. But if you want a great steak, and this is not a shameless plug, this is because it's a great steak.
Yeah,
it rivals Ruth's Chris, in my opinion.
See, I've heard that same thing, but I've also heard that both are pretty pricey as far as you're going to get. I mean, you're going to get what you pay for, but you better be willing to pay. If that makes sense. That's what I hear anyway. I don't know. I haven't been. I don't get out to Huntsville very, very. In fact, coming to work every day in Arab is about as close to Huntsville as I come.
How much, what is the biggest price you have ever paid for a steak?
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to, I'm pretty sure at one point I have paid, Just for a steak, I would probably say about $15 or $16. Now I've paid $20-something for like a steak and shrimp kind of deal, but just for the steak, I'd probably say about $16, maybe 17. You're smiling at me.
One of my favorite restaurants in the country is in Tampa, Florida. It's called Burns Steakhouse. B-E-N-R-S, Burns Steakhouse. Google it. Check it out online. It has been there for 70 years, 75 years. And I've had it at steaks coast to coast, New York to L.A. to San Francisco to Miami to New Orleans and everywhere in between. Minneapolis, there's some great steak restaurants, believe it or not, in Minneapolis. The steak at Burns was a what they call the butcher's cut of a fillet, which is the butcher's cut is always the absolute best piece of meat of a fillet there is. Chateaubriand. I had a 8-ounce Chateaubriand butcher cut at Burns Steakhouse two nights before the Super Bowl 18, 19 in Tampa. $129.
Whew. Ooh.
It was aged. It was 10-year or 5-year aged. It was aged, and it was literally prepared to where you put it. You got a wonderful taste in your mouth. You made one bite, and it was ready to swallow. It was so soft. It was so tender, and it just, the taste was fabulous.
Yeah.
And I always say when anybody goes to Tampa, the Tampa area or whatever for anything, that's my go-to place for a steak. Miss Melanie and I were down for John Rock and Roll Anthony's funeral, back in 20. When did Alabama play Notre Dame? 2012 for the national championship.
Technically 2013, but it was the 2012 season. Yeah.
We were there, the night before John's funeral. I wanted to go and take Melanie to Burns, and they were closed for remodeling.
Oh wow!
I was so sick, so I haven't had her chance. And of course, she's from down in that area. You know, she's from over in the Lakeland area, and I wanted to take her. But you know, to me, a steak needs to be properly cooked. Now you've witnessed how I like my steaks.
Yes,
which is rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
you like them still moving.
And in some cases, slap that cow on the butt coming through the kitchen and bring him on out.
Yeah,
And I really like a good rare cut of meat. And this was just charred on the outside perfectly. And like I said, melt in your mouth. I'm one of these people. I grew up in a household. Well, if the steak wouldn't burn and you couldn't put it on the sole of your shoe with what you had left over and use it as a sole for your shoe the next day, it wasn't a good steak. I went off to college and learned what decent food tasted like, because when I was growing up, I grew up in Huntsville.
Yeah.
There were very few really good restaurants.
Yeah.
And so you got what you were around. And we were not a family that went out to eat a lot. Going out to eat to us was going to the Elks Club for somebody's birthday party.
Yeah. Now it's an everyday thing for the world.
Yeah. And so now, I can't believe, now, just in the 22 years since coming back to this area, I can't believe the restaurants, the good restaurants that are not chains,
yeah,
that are in Huntsville, Alabama.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I enjoy a good steak. I really prefer it medium well, but I'm learning that a lot of these places that are chains that you go and you ask for a medium well steak, they don't really know what the meaning of the word medium well is.
True.
So I've started asking in recent months, just give it to me well done. Cook that thing up. Just give it to me well done. Because I prefer, unlike you, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I'd prefer, you know, something that's not so very, very chewy and easy on the mouth or something like that. I don't mind a little bit of tough meat. That doesn't bother me at all. But I had a bad experience about 2 weeks ago with a steak that they brought it out. And I won't name the place, but they brought it out. I looked at it, cut into it. Yes, it was a chain. I cut into it.
Why weren't you?
And I looked at the lady. No, we weren't there. You can take that one off the list. But I looked at the server who brought it out, and I said, "That's unacceptable." Mm. That's. I mean, it was just that bad. I would not even give it a thought to eat it. And she said, "Well, what did you order?" And I said, "I asked for well done." And she says, "Oh, that's definitely not well done. Let me take it back." The lady was very nice about it, took it back to the cook, came back out with it about 5 minutes later, and it was medium well.
Same
so
steak?
So I said, okay, same steak, same steak. But yeah, it was the same steak, and it wasn't, it was okay. Like I said, it was actually what I normally like by that point. It was medium well instead of well done, and my wife Beverly even said, "Send it back again. Tell them to give you a new one this time." And I was like, "You know what? This was like 9:30 at night, and we were just now eating dinner." I said, "No, I'm just."
So you suffered through it.
I suffered through it, and chose to just enjoy the time that I had with my wife, because I knew exactly what was going to happen. After that, we were going to get in the car, go home, and get in the bed. We were both so wore out. We were so tired. And eating a late dinner, just I don't know that it's not what you want to do, but I just didn't, you know, made the best of it as best I could, and went on from there. But to me, places like what you mentioned earlier that are not chain restaurants, that are, I don't want to say mom and pop, but that are locally owned, locally operated, those have some of the best steaks that I have ever had in my life. We've got a few good ones right here locally. You don't have to go all the way to Huntsville, but if you go to Huntsville, there's a lot of, like you mentioned, a lot of great places that are not chained, but they might as well be. They look like they're a chain, you know, part of a chain that makes some really, really good steaks and shrimp to go with it and whatever else.
Well, there's a couple of things on your story I want to comment. Number one, and you mentioned restaurants, you know, Sierra's, which advertises with us, to me,
yes,
is some of the best steaks there is.
I love it.
And it's a Mexican restaurant. It's been here 25 years, 23 years, whatever, and it's great. Their steaks are great.
And I don't eat Mexican food when I go there. I eat a steak.
Yeah, everybody does.
A steak and baked potato.
It should be a steakhouse. Man. But anyway. But Huntsville Grill 29 is a great steak. But anyway, when somebody brings you food, I had a very good friend when I was first starting out in broadcasting. I was a music director at WERC in Birmingham, KIX 106. A friend named Jack Hakem. Jack Hakem was the president of Playboy Records, of all places.
Oh, boy.
Went to had dinner with Barbie Benton one night. And then Jack went on to start his own business, and we stayed very good friends. He is now the mayor of Bullhead City, Arizona. He and I are about 3 years difference in age. But anyway, Jack was from Lebanon, not Tennessee, the country. And the first time we ever went out, we went to a place called Geekas Down the Street in Birmingham, which was over on
What's that called again?
Geekas Down the Street.
Geekas Down the Street.
It was a Greek fella, had a very nice restaurant. And Jack asked for a steak, rare. He sent it back three times.
Three times?
Three times. And each time, they brought him a different steak, which is, in a good restaurant, that's what you do.
Yeah.
If it's undercooked or overcooked, you start over.
Yeah.
In a good restaurant, that's a mark of a good restaurant. A good restaurateur wants you to be happy, period. So you don't get the same steak that's been put in the microwave or been thrown back on the grill or on the fire or whatever, and you get it back. You don't.
Right.
That's a mark of a great restaurant, of a good restaurant. I won't say a great restaurant. Mark of a good restaurant, not to get your same food back.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, there is no distinct, if I go to a restaurant, and let's just take steak out. Let's go to a steak restaurant. And I tell you I want it rare. Rare to my taste and my eyes and my ears may be something different than it is to that waiter.
That is very, very
true.
Or
that cook.
That's true.
So what I say is, I want it rare. How is your rare? And they'll say, well, it's barely just seared on the outside. It's still cool on the inside, blah, blah, blah. That's how I want it.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. If it's warm on the inside, it's probably more medium rare than rare.
Yeah.
Same token for the backside of the chart for well done and burnt.
Right.
And so I think you have to, if you're in a good restaurant and you're ordering a steak and that steak is over $15 on that menu and you're ordering it a certain way, ask them, to you, what does that mean? If I say I want it medium, what does that mean to you as the waiter? What does that mean to that cook in the kitchen?
Yeah.
How is your medium steak? What does it look like when it comes on, out on my plate when I get it?
Right.
And you're just asking a question. You're helping communicate and getting an experience at a restaurant that you want.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm one of these people, and I've probably eaten out more than I've eaten in my life now. I'm one of these people that if it ain't right, somebody's going to know about it. And I'm not nasty about it.
Mm-hmm.
Most now, if the waiter's nasty or if it's just a bad experience, yeah, I'll tell them, where to put their food and it ain't in the ice box. But most of the time, if it's a good experience, I'll pull the maitre d' over, or I'll pull the waiter over, maybe, the manager.
Yeah.
And say, hey, this was really good and I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Over and above whatever I've tipped. But if it's an experience where it needs some work, it's not beyond you as a customer to say, and you don't have to say it in front of a bunch of people. You don't have to say it in front of the people that you're with.
Mm-hmm.
Pull the guy or the girl aside and say, hey, there's a little problem with this, this, and this. If you need, you guys need to work it out. Because actually, they're probably, if it's a restaurateur that's serious about his business, he's looking for that kind of feedback.
No, yeah. I hadn't thought about that, the difference in people's thinking as far as what, rare, medium, well, or whatever might be to me might not be the same thing to the cook in particular, because the waitress is sort of the in-between there, or the waiter is sort of the in-between. It's the cook that's got to take care. I never really thought about that. I did think about it that night, and I thought, well, that might be what he thinks of it as, although to me, the way it was still very much bleeding. I said that's very well off of what medium well is, if that's what he thinks medium well is. But
I've learned about Melanie is Melanie likes her steak cooked. She doesn't want to see any red.
Yeah.
But and a lot of times she'll say, make it well done. And if I've and I always look around, if I'm in a restaurant, I always look around and see what other people are doing. If well done means there's charcoal briquettes sitting on the outside of the steak, you may want to temper it down a step and go medium well. And there's been opportunities where she'll say, well, I like it well done. And I'll look at her and say, not at this restaurant. You need it medium,
yeah.
Medium well. And medium well will come out and it's exactly what she wants.
Right.
Because some people take it to the extreme on well done, just like they take it to the extreme on rare.
True. Yeah. So in other words, you've got a tough task this weekend then with Blondie in the Dark's not only Valentine's Day, but her birthday as well. Every year.
I think she'll be happy. I think she'll be very happy.
We won't spoil it in case she decides to listen and figure out what you got planned.
This has been a weird week. Before, I know you want to get into some things about signing day, and that's great. But before we do that, this has been a weird week here at Fun Radio because it's sort of been the returns of the prodigal sons.
Oh, gosh. Been taking bets on who's going to show up next. First, we had an old
DJ
familiar
DC.
Voice. DJ DC from the, in particular, known for his Saturday night dance party. And, of course, did a few live shows here on New Year's Eve and things like that. And I got to give credit to DC on one thing there. He was doing something with that Saturday night dance party, in particular with the New Year's Eve party that he would do. He started that Facebook Live stuff, and that was sort of the introduction to it here on Fun Radio. He would go live under the Fun 92.7 banner, and I don't know how many people at any given time were watching it or listening to it, but he was just in here with his phone out on Facebook Live having fun, bringing people in on the music and enjoying what's left of that particular year, getting ready for the new year. Had a lot of fun with that, and I got to give him credit for at least that, because that was sort of the ball in my mind that got things rolling to have us put some of our football broadcast on Facebook and other things that we do, such as when we go on remotes, we try to go on Facebook Live, Twitter Live now, and get the ball rolling on that. So give Daryl credit for that one, for kind of bringing that into our laps. But we turned around that next day, and oh my gosh, I was standing there talking with Blondie
DJ
in the dark.
DJ Swift walks
and,
in.
Yeah, and we're in the, I don't even remember what we were talking about. All of a sudden, she peeks around the corner and goes, what in the beep? And I'm kind of, my back is to the door. I'm going, what is she looking at? And I turn and look, and here comes in the door the hair that stands 5 foot tall off his head. Swift, as we called him, the baby DJ, yeah, walks in the door.
You know, and then I ran into him, of all things, at Staples over in Gunnersville. You know, and he was very young when he came to work here, and was with us about a year, and he's learned, but he's also one of these people that like to experiences in life, and radio, I think, was one of those experiences he wanted to experience. And he's doing other things now. In fact, he's doing a thing for businesses where they, he helps you encrypt your data so somebody can't steal your vital information or whatever, which is fine. That's a great calling. But, you know, he was, you go through life and you meet people, and the older I get, the more I realize this. Everybody, I don't think there's bad people and good people anymore. I think there's people. Mm-hmm. Now, there are people that take bad roads that end up being bad to the bone.
Yeah.
And there are people that take good roads and being very successful and very, you know, influential and all that.
Yeah.
And then everybody else sort of just experiences life. And he's one of these people that I think, as life goes on, will be a person of many experiences.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not good. That's not bad. That's just experience.
Right.
But I sort of, I guess, gravitate to people like yourself. You and I hit it off from day one. We had a lot in common with sports and football and all that. But as we have grown together and worked together and have played together and have been on trips together and done things outside the community together and all that good stuff, I see a lot of me in you for the broadcast side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I also see a side of you that I could never be, because you're much more devoted and loyal spiritually than I've ever been able to be. And I admire you for that. I think it's a very strong bond and a very strong fiber of your constitution. And you married well. And you guys are making a wonderful, wonderful couple. I look forward to the kids. But
so does my grandmother.
Yeah, there you go. Get on it, buddy. You know, sometimes you go through life. Melanie is an interesting. I met Melanie through her mom, and Melanie coming to work and being a caregiver for my mom, and Melanie and I are really different people in a lot of ways. Her interest and my interest aren't the same interest. But we're also a lot of the same person in a lot of our ways of how we conduct our lives.
Yeah.
And how we conduct our businesses and our thinking and how we treat people. And I think that's okay, too. I think there can be a wonderful bond of people that are like that and in life. And but with her 50th birthday, or I'm sorry, her 50th anniversary of her birth coming to light here, I think we sort of discovered each other for each other at the right time in our lives.
Yeah. You're listening to the Fun and Then Some podcast with Fun 92.7, Michael St. John, Adam Ward here. To go kind of along the lines of what you were thinking, I was raised to believe that every person that you encounter in your life, whether they're here for only 30 seconds or 30 years, or in some case in marriage, you know, for the rest of your life, they have a purpose. Even if it is a very short-lived purpose, they have a purpose for being in your life. You know, so when I look back on my 6+ years here at Fun Radio, and I see all the moving parts that have come and gone through here, from those who were here when I first got here to that are no longer here, you know, I kind of call myself an original now, because I am. You know, I'm one of the for as young as I am compared to all my other coworkers, I'm one of the elder statesmen, if you will, a veteran. And I look back at all these people who I might have only worked with for 3 months, 6 months, whatever it might be, to 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it is. And I, you know, did we have our ups and downs? Sure. Did we have times where we disagreed? You bet we did. Times where we got mad at each other and argued? You betcha, you know. But there were also good times. There were also times, though, I think all the time to learn something. Mm-hmm. And that was one thing that I was raised to believe. Give credit to my mom and dad on that, is that every person, no matter how long they are in your life, serves a purpose for you to learn something. And it's up to you to figure out what you're supposed to learn. It's up to you to take that lesson that you learn and how to apply it to your life. And maybe sometimes the lesson, you know, looks bad from the start, but you figure out how to not do something, you know, because you watch somebody else do it the wrong way, whatever it is. And so, I, you know, as far as those people are concerned who have been here, not just the two that we've mentioned, but all those who may listen to us, I believe that they have served a tremendous purpose personally in my life to, you know, whether it's teaching me something good or something that I ought not to do, whatever it might be. And they don't even have to realize that they taught it. That's I think that's key too. But the each individual that has come through these doors and worked here, they have served a purpose, not just to continue on the Fun 92.7 path and keep us strong and everything. That's only part of it. I really feel like there's much more to an individual's life. And I hope for me personally that I'm affecting those around me in that same way, that I'm teaching something, whether it's, I think you always are teaching something, but whether it's good or bad, I hope it's good. I you know, that's my end game for one day when I fly the nest, if you will, is to leave behind something good.
Sure.
For somebody, whether it's the person taking my place or, you know, you guys or whomever, you know, the sales department, doesn't matter. Leaving something good for the next wave, if you will, of funners, for lack of a better way to put it. But I mean, and I totally agree with you. And it was good. It was good to see them. I, you know, you had an opportunity more so to talk with DC than I did. Because when he came in, that was, we had some school closings going on, and I was just, I was covered up in that. And I wished I could have taken 5 minutes, but I really got focused in and tried to get the job done. But I did get to speak with him for a moment. It was good to say hello to him, shake his hand, see how he was doing. As well as, you know, Baby Swift, that was something else. Telling us about his adventures moving off to Carolina for a while and coming back and trying to start his own business. Sounded to me like the boy's done some growing up, you know, and that's always a good thing. But
that was well said. Very well said. And I think the more people get to listen to us on this podcast, you get more to get to know us a little bit better through the radio or through the audio, as it's called now.
Yeah.
And get it. But well said, and it's always great to see. You know, I'm not a Facebooker, and the reason I'm not a Facebooker is because there are people that I've encountered in life that were not good for me, and I'm not looking forward to seeing or hearing from them again.
Yes.
And the other reason is because my daughter, Jamie, put me on Facebook back in 2009, and it was before Melanie and I were together, but we were not married at the time. And I didn't know what Facebook was. And about, you know, a day and a half later, three or four ex-girlfriends had befriended. And I figured out, or I was told very quickly that that was not kosher.
Yeah.
So I said, well, rather than, and I've been one of these people, I've sort of been lucky in life. Most people that I have been involved with in both men and women in my life, I've left on good terms. And that's, I'm proud of that on most occasions. But I didn't need to go down that road again. So as a result, I got off Facebook and never got back on, and I'm not going to get it back on. You can read me on Twitter, and every now and then I'll post something on Instagram. But
yeah,
but I'm not. I'd rather have a great reunion with people out of our past that walk in and say hi. We're saying hi because we're back in town or whatever, like we've had the past few days.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. Okay. I know you want to talk a little bit about sports and everything that's going on. I got to ask you before you do. I know you want to play a couple of things about recruiting last week. Did you watch any XFL?
I did a little bit. I didn't catch it near as much as I would have liked to have had. Had a lot of going on this over the weekend when they debuted it, but I've gone back since then, and you can go on YouTube and see ESPN's put the highlight reels together of the games, and you can watch them. And it amazed me at the number of names that I recognized, whether I remember them from college or former pro athletes in the NFL, which I guess they're pro athletes now with the XFL. But the thing that really I think kind of stood out to me was just the overall presentation. I remember turning on that, was it the Washington Generals or something that the Ohio State boy plays for, the quarterback? Gosh, what was his name?
Cardale Stewart. Cardale
Jones. Jones, something like that. Yeah, Jones. He beat Alabama, the third-string quarterback from Ohio State in 2014. Hate to bring up bad memories for the Rammer Jammers like myself. But I got to looking not so much just at the play overall, but sort of the atmosphere of it. That was one of the games inside a soccer stadium. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, boy, that was well done. They picked a stadium that doesn't have 100,000 seats because they knew they weren't going to fill them up.
Right.
They picked a stadium with 25,000 and filled it up.
Well, the Dallas team played in the stadium that hosts the Texas Rangers
mm-hmm.
in baseball.
Yeah. I thought it was, for the most part, very well done. There were a few things that I could have done without. I'm not a big, you know, I saw on Twitter a lot of people were, oh, man, I really love that after every play that the camera can just get up in the player's face, walk out on the field, and even interview the player. Why did you fumble the ball, you know, or what? I'm like, I'm not a big fan of that per se.
That's the wrestling side of it.
Yeah, and I understand it, and I think at some point that will go away personally.
What do you think of the extra point thing?
Well, that's weird.
I like it.
It's weird.
Well, think about it. But think about it. It gives a whole new dimension to the game. First of all, I've never, and I tweeted Johnny Majors, my buddy Coach Majors, up in Tennessee. I haven't heard back from him, but I tweeted him. I said, Coach, no longer in football with the XFL is the most important point, the extra point, which he always made a big deal about when we would do games together. But the fact that you go for 1 point from the 2 yard line,
mm-hmm.
you can go for 2 points from the 5.
Yeah.
And then 3 points from the 10. You can get back in a ball game. You're down 16 points. You can be back in a ball game in one score.
Yeah. Yeah, you really can. And I think that was, you know, and I get it and I understand it. And I think I can find the entertainment in that myself as well, because that was one of the big issues that the NFL had for many years, was the extra point had gotten boring. It was almost like nobody cares. So the NFL ended up pulling it back to the 15-yard line. Now you do see a little bit more action to go try to block it or anything. It's not as automatic. Kickers, even kickers miss it, which can play a big role in the outcome of the game now that it's so far back. At least from what they, you know, are used to. Well, the XFL kind of took that and ran with it even more and kind of built off of that idea, not only making it more challenging, but let's put some temptation in there. Let's see what kind of game plans we get now.
Who gets from greedy?
Yeah, exactly. But there was one score, and I want to say it was it might have been the Dallas game, 19-9.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see that in football. 19-9. You see 3 field goals,
right?
But you don't get the score of 19.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I think they got a decent product going. Can it survive? Is my thought.
Well, they had good crowds, and believe it or not, this is a league. And having known some of the people that are involved in the production side of it from the WWE, from my days in the wrestling, when these same people were doing our show out of Dallas on ESPN, and we're doing Jerry Jarrett stuff out of Nashville. One of the things that, first of all, it doesn't have to have a big crowd to survive. That's number one. And number two is, I really think that the game itself, it reminded me a lot of, and this is, I relate to it because I actually call some of these games summer pro league basketball, or what they call the G League in the NBA.
Uh-huh.
And it was pure to the game. I liked the fact it was pure to the game.
Yes.
It was football. The things I liked were, like I said, the extra point. I love the fact that now in this day of communications, the skill people have the coach mm-hmm. in their headset or in their helmet.
Yeah, as opposed to the NFL when it's just one player
right.
on each side of the ball. Typically on the offense, it's the quarterback. And then a lot of times on the defense, you're either going to find like the middle linebacker right. or the strong safety.
Correct.
Has got that one little, and it's a lot of times it's green, and you can actually see it sometimes in the ear hole mm-hmm. of the player, and that's what's communicating between the coach and the player.
Correct.
But with the XFL, they've gone a little bit different of a route. Multiple players have it in there, and I know I was listening to another radio show the other day. They were talking about it, and one thing I didn't realize was sometimes they had a situation in one of the games where a coach was having to wear two headsets because right. one of them was broke,
mm-hmm.
and so he could only communicate with one headset upstairs to the coaches upstairs, and the other headset was to communicate with the players.
That's right.
So, you know, I think it's very unique. I think it presents a lot of different things. The one other thing I did like was the insight on the replays.
Oh, I agree.
And they
with
brought
that.
You into the booth.
Amen.
And you could hear the communication. A lot of times you'll be lucky if you're sitting there watching an ESPN or an ABC or CBS telecast of a football game, and you'll be lucky from time to time to hear the referee in the background make a mention to whoever he's talking to upstairs without turning on his field mic. But with the XFL, you heard everything.
And saw everything.
You saw everything. And the other thing, too, was, and I thought the this joystick. Was really cool, that he was using an Xbox controller. I thought, exactly. How in the, what in the, who, what genius came up with that?
The official in the booth had an Xbox controller.
Yes.
That's yeah. Exactly right.
Which is owned by Microsoft, so it's not that big a stretch that would happen.
By the way, the head of officials that came up with that idea, I was reading this in the New York Post, is the former head of officials with the Big Ten, who was also the head of officials with the NCAA for like 10 years.
Hmm.
And they brought him into the game and said, okay, how would you do it?
Yeah.
And that's how he did it. The thing I didn't like, I'll tell you one thing I did not like. I hated the kickoffs.
Really?
Because
I could sort of see that.
Well, first of all, it's a hard rule to explain. The kicker has to kick the ball between the 20 and the goal line.
Yeah.
If it goes into the end zone, it comes out to the 45.
Mm-hmm.
So it penalizes the kicker for kicking it into the end zone. And nobody moves or can move to go downfield on the kickoff until the player catches the ball.
Yeah.
And so that didn't get warm and fuzzy with me at all.
And the kicker is all the way back there at the 40 or the 34, wherever they're kicking off from, by himself, while his teammates are right up there at like the 40 or the 35 on the other side
right.
of the field.
Exactly.
They're like 5 yards between the kickoff team and the kickoff return team.
That's correct.
That's a that'll have to be looked at, in my opinion.
I agree
there, but I do think, and I think for the long term, the XFL at least is going to be here a lot longer to stay than its predecessor, the Alliance of American Football, in large part because of the money side. I don't think the AAF totally had the backing that they should have had before they ever launched that thing. I always thought that it was a premature launch from the get go. I think it was only, let's just beat the XFL to the punch. But with Vince McMahon running the show here, I was again listening to this other radio show about what was happening with these players and what exactly all this entails. These players are not exactly getting chipped either, by the way. Mm-hmm. They're playing football and they're getting paid not as handsomely as a Tom Brady or somebody in the NFL, but they're getting paid. The highest paid quarterback right now is making just over $500,000+ a year.
Right.
That is not something to turn your nose up at. I know that these players want a whole lot more, but it's better than the AAF. The AAF players were making like $25,000 a year.
Okay, but look at it this way too. You get a pair of, like Cornell Stewart, he makes maybe $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
Would he be better off, in his mind, he wants to play football. Is he better off making $500,000 a year playing in this G League or the XFL, or should he be making $60,000 a year driving a Uber car or a Lyft car yep. in New York City? Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to look at it this way. The other thing I really think that the in reading the backstory on the XFL in the New York Post, one of the things about the XFL is, like I said, they don't need to have a packed house to make it with the crowd.
Yeah.
But they've kept the ticket prices under $20.
Yeah.
Except on the VIP packages, which I think are $50 a seat, but then you not only get your food, you get to go down on the field before the game and meet the players, get your autographs or take pictures
right.
or whatever. There's an experience that's involved. And that's like a $50 ticket.
Yeah.
But for $20, you can buy tickets for as low as $5 in New York City to see a football game. There are people in New York that have never seen a football game that will spend $5, $10, $15 for the family to go see a football game.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I think something like this would be a great family outing. I think the one thing that they did with the XFL did that the AAF did not do very properly, you know, first of all, I'm not knocking the fact that we had a Birmingham team. You know, that was fun while it lasted. But Birmingham is not a market for
it's
something
not a major
like
market.
That.
Right.
And
right.
they went major market, even though Dallas, for instance, has the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys are not playing right now, so now you've got the Dallas Renegades taking the field. Seattle has a football team in the NFL. They also have an XFL team. New York, you know,
they also went into markets that either don't have a football team or have lost a football team. They got San Diego, or not San Diego, San Antonio,
mm-hmm.
and then they went into St. Louis.
Yeah.
And I think it's very well done. Now, up north, the northern teams playing outdoors in February, they're going to have to get over that sooner or later. We've had decent weather, I guess, so far for these games, but, you know, that's going to have to be a hump. But I personally think, and having lived through the World Football League and having lived through the USFL,
mm-hmm.
having lived through the XFL the first time, the AAF or whatever, and now this one, I think this has the best I think it has the best chance of surviving of any of them that have ever been put together.
I agree to that, especially when you compare it to the XFL's first run. I think the first run was more for show.
It was a wrestling show.
Yeah, I wasn't, you know, I was alive, but I wasn't old enough to comprehend. Now I look back on it, and I can see just in 1 week of the new version versus a nice table full of the old, and I can see already the differences that have been made. This is not let's go get the biggest and top names and just go out here and kill each other and make the crowd go ooh and ah because of big hits or whatever. This is, okay, you know what? We're going to play football. If we're going to call ourselves a football league, yeah, it's going to be under the same banner, but we're actually going to play football, sort of like what you were talking about, being true to the game. I mean, you've got guys out here who are spirited enough that want to continue their career in some capacity. The other thing that kind of brings to mind, though, is how is this going to affect the future of the league, and not only that particular league, but of the NFL, with a bunch of kids coming out of college looking to get into the pros. Some kids that won't even get drafted. Are they going to go play in a league like this? There were big names getting mentioned. What about if it were possible, if this league had started 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, would it be possible to go get big names like a Joe Burrow or a Tua Tagovailoa to be your starting quarterback, at least until they know they're going to get a starting job in the NFL? Would that be plausible?
See, again, that's how I compare it to that G League of the NBA. I think it could be a developmental kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, one thing at least to another, and you mentioned the draft, and you mentioned with players leaving college, you've also got players coming in, and we went through a signing day. This was the most boring signing day I've seen since signing day was invented.
Yeah.
But that's because the real signing day is the early signing day period in December.
It is. And that was,
you and know, I think that ESPN was, now realizes that.
Yeah, because there was not a single bit of coverage. Used to, I would come in here and be prepared basically on a Wednesday to barely get any work done, it felt like, and sit here in studio and watch the ESPN ticker and wait for some news for Auburn or Alabama, UAB, Jacksonville State, didn't matter what, and every 15, 30 minutes be breaking news that this new 5-star recruit is committing to this particular university. Well, now with that early signing period that they implemented a couple of years ago, that has totally changed it. I came in, turned the TV on, and they were having SportsCenter. Mm-hmm. It was just normal programming. Mm-hmm. And so I got to, well, you know what, there'll be something there. I hadn't really taken into account how many early signees happened in December, and of those who enrolled early, for those who are sort of unwashed or unbaptized in the recruiting ways, each school can only sign up to 25 players in a signing period. And on early signing day in December, Alabama had already signed 22. Mm-hmm. And we stay with Alabama because we are, you know, a proud Alabama sponsor. We
affiliate.
You know, affiliate. We've got all the games right here for you.
Fourth oldest in the network.
On Fun 92.7. But, of course, you turn around and a lot of times, Michael, the funnest part of signing day is not so much the kids that are coming and you looking forward to what could be, but it's the Nick Saban press conference because he always is good for a bite or two. And I wanted to bring these in, and I wanted to bring these in and make sure that we get folks some good laughs in here on this. But Nick Saban had a couple of zingers last week for National Signing Day, and we're going to play a couple of them for you right here. Were you any good at math?
No. Math and science were my weakest subjects.
Math and science were I can concur with that. That's something else you and I have in common. Apparently, this reporter has some issues as well.
Today wasn't a very busy day for you guys, just in terms of signatures coming in. Is that what you expected? And how do you feel like you addressed your remaining needs?
Do you guys take math? Do you have math class? Did you learn how to add when you did have math class? Like 22 and 3 make 25? I mean, what's that?
I think you said it wasn't very busy.
No, I know, but is that what we expected? Yeah, we only could sign 3 guys. That's what we expected. Based on math.
So based on math, yeah, it's what we expected. We could only sign 3 guys today. So while you guys might not be, you know, having a bunch of breaking news, We did what we could based on the rules. And I think that was kind of one of them moments the reporter instantly regretted asking the question. The other thing, and I think folks might find this a little even more interesting, was earlier in the week, Coach Kiffin, now at Ole Miss, who is a former assistant under Coach Saban, was on a podcast similar to what we do and was asked about the differences in the way he recruits versus the way Coach Saban recruits. And of course, Lane Kiffin is he's one of the brightest offensive minds in the game, but I like to say he's also one of the best kiss butts in the game as well.
He's also a loose cannon.
He really is.
Makes for fun.
But somebody asked him about this, and you had an interesting take on this. I think you know where I'm going with this, but you had an interesting take. Let's play this up for you right now.
Well, look, there's obviously a generation gap between the two of us. I mean, but the way I grew up communicating was talking. You know, when I pump gas in my dad's service station, I went to the window and I'd say, "May I help you, please?" I didn't text him and ask him. So I think, you know, to me, I kind of feel sorry for people that I see walking around, looking at their phone, running into the wall, not even knowing, you know, somebody's getting shot across the street and they don't even know it because they can't take their eyes off their phone. I'm in the other camp, you know, I feel sorry for people like that, you know, like.
So in case you didn't pick up on it, he's talking more about the social media trend and everybody's on social media. And if you follow anybody, any coaches in particular, Lane Kiffin on social media, you know that he's probably got 2 or 3 posts a day on Twitter, not counting what he replies to. And the reporter was asking him, you know, is that something that you'll ever do? Can you see yourself getting into the social media? She mentioned Twitter in particular. First of all, the man is working on 70, okay? It's a little late in the game to be worried about getting it on Twitter. But, Michael, he had an interesting point talking about the communication and the difference between him and pretty much everybody else here in this world. I want to get your take on that. I know you are involved in the social media side of it, but I think you have found quite a balance between just being being entertained or being a piece of entertainment on social media versus actually engaging with somebody.
Well, this could be 10 more podcasts. You realize that, don't you?
Yes.
But just a quick synopsis, and we ought to talk about this. You know, I've been saying, and you've heard me say this, I got to do a career day at a school last year. And I'm open, by the way, to do, and Adam is too. If you've got a school group, you want a career, you're having a career day, and first of all, we'd love to come and talk to you about broadcasting and talk to you about the media and all that kind of stuff. And we'd do it to a junior high or high school, or private school, doesn't matter. But we're available for that. But anyway, that's a shameless plug. But I think, and I've shared this thought with several of my close friends, I think we have got to revamp the curriculum in schools, especially in high schools, and be inclusive of 3 areas that are not being taught, quote unquote, as subjects in high school. Number one is communication.
Yeah.
I sat in a restaurant. In fact, you and I were laughing about this. We sat together during football season at a restaurant, watched 2 people, a guy and a girl, talk to each other. They were across from each other on the table and not saying a word to each other, but we're texting each other.
Mm-hmm.
We witnessed that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people today, and going to this class or this field day or career day, I realized just in, because I wanted to know. I mean, I wasn't trying to be the boss man or the teacher or whatever. I just wanted to know. Over half of that class, and it was about, there were about 20 kids in the room, maybe a few more. Over half of that class had no idea how to ask a question or answer a question when they were asked a question. No
really?
Idea.
Really?
No idea. No communication skill whatsoever. And I think in this day of texting and social media and virtual reality and everything else that's coming down the pike, we better be teaching these kids how to act as human beings in communication.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, of course, you talk about discipline and all this stuff. The majority of kids in this country right now going in and out of public schools are coming from broken families, over 50%. And they are not being taught how to be good parents, how to treat a woman, how to treat a man, how to treat children.
Sure.
How to become parents. Maybe not in the image and likeness of your parents. And I was lucky, and you were lucky. We grew up with great parents.
Mm-hmm.
Mine have passed. You're so lucky to have yours still. And I've met your parents, and I know your parents, and they are wonderful parents. And my parents were wonderful parents. Did I have arguments with them? Did I get mad with them? Did they beat my butt? You betcha. But it was all in a learning process. In this day and time, those same kids that are you think are growing up like you and I grew up are growing up and their auntie is raising them, their grandmother's raising them.
Yeah.
My gosh, when we talked to Coach Pugh out at East Limestone, when I interviewed him before the game this past year, and he and I are good friends, he was telling me about three kids that started his fall camp that were homeless. Now, I'm not talking about living with somebody else's parents. I'm not talking about living with another player's parents. I'm not talking about living with a kenpo. One kid was living literally under a viaduct or a bridge, and two other kids were living in a car.
Wow.
High school.
Wow.
So I think there has got to be classes taught in school on how to be a parent, how to be a responsible adult parent.
Yeah.
And that's not being taught.
I agree.
Taught. And the third thing that I think has got to be taught is we have got to have a social skills class to when you walk into a restaurant or you walk into a department store or you even if you order online, the civilities of how to say please and thank you.
Yes, very much. I agree. You know, it makes me think about, you mentioned Coach Pugh, a conversation that I had with Fife's Paul Benefield, head football coach there, back during the fall. And I've noticed it for years, and I've always thought very highly of it, but it never really got brought up in conversation until one day I had a lot of time with him. He and I spend more time talking off the mic than we do on. Imagine that. But I asked him, as players were coming in to have workouts, every player, not a one, missed the opportunity. Hello, coach, good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Mm-hmm.
And it was direct eye contact. There was no, while they're walking, as Coach mentioned, looking down at their phone and at least saying something. It was eye contact, acknowledging the fact that there's somebody else, there's another human being in the same presence as you are right there that is, you know, at least looking for you to say something to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Coach, I said, you know, is that just, you know, I said, I'm not from Fife per se. I graduated from Plainview. That wasn't done when I was in high school. Is this something that these kids just do? And he looked at me and he grinned and he says, they do now. I was kind of like, well, okay. And he says, we've been working on that for around here for quite a long time. He said, it's finally become something sort of ingrained in the kids. Mm-hmm. When they walk into the room, they don't just ignore me. They don't walk by me without acknowledging me. He said, we have been working to try to teach them how to not only be good people, but be good men, how to become, at least give them some of the basic social graces to be men in the community one day that they are going to have to be the future leaders, moms, dads, you know, preachers, business owners, you know, whatever it might be that the Lord has for them. He said, because I learned one thing a long time ago in coaching. He said, I learned one thing, and that was I might be the closest thing to a dad some of these boys ever have. And he says, and if they don't have that, if they don't have a dad and I'm not going to be that for them, who's going to teach them even some of the most basic of things in life, how to shake somebody's hand, how to look them in the eye and say hello. And I just looked at him and if I could have, I don't know that I've ever admired Coach Benefield more until I did this past season, just by that conversation. It just blew me away. And I left there with a smile on my face and said, that should be the Friday night interview. So I'll leave it at that.
That is a great way to close out our program
this week.
And
I agree.
Great job. And spread the word, folks. If you're listening, thank you for listening, first of all. And second of all, spread the word. Let folks know that we're just sitting here chit-chatting. And if you're listening and you're in the bathroom, enjoy the go. That's how we started. We'll be back next week.